I will begin in about 20 seconds. Thanks for being here. If my father wanted to talk to me, what would he say? And if your father wanted to talk to you, what would he say? I am a firm believer unless we can heal our relationships with our biological mothers and our biological fathers, we will be impeding our own development, our spiritual growth, our happiness, our health, our success, our relationships. To me, it is extremely important that we deal with these issues and resolve them. My sister, Iona, heard a message from my father for me the other day, and she wrote it down on a card and gave it to me. It said, "Tom, I love you. I am sorry. We will talk when you want to listen. Go for a walk, and I will be there. Edward." As you guessed, my father's name was Edward. He was senior, I was junior. He was called Ed, I was called Tom. So we're both Edward Thomas. I write about and talk about communication a lot of times, and I also talk about listening, but when it really comes down to it, I don't really do much listening. Just thinking and talking. Thinking, writing, talking. Not listening. I probably won't listen to my brother George's advice that I should walk for clarity's sake, for balancing the energy, for my health. And I probably won't consistently go walking to hear my father. Now, a day ago, Iona showed up and 8 o'clock in the morning and said, "Let's go for a walk." And I didn't have a good way to get out of it, so she and I went for a walk. This morning, I went for a walk myself before I journaled. I think I had made up my mind that walking really takes a lot of mind share. You know, you got to pay attention to sidewalks and cars and so on. And that's not really conducive to listening. I think that's probably excuse making on my part. Maybe there's a difference between listening and hearing. Hearing seems to be the perception of sound. Right? Yeah. Did you hear that? Yeah, it was a foghorn, right? Yeah, I think. I heard that noise. But I think listening might be the perception of meaning. I'm familiar with this sequence. Listen to me. No. And it is that rejection, that refusal to get the meaning being communicated. I think that's a common challenge. Certainly I've experienced plenty of that personally as the refuser. So I have that habit pattern. Reject first, consider second, if at all. My father said, "I love you. I am sorry." I would have said the same things back to him, but in reverse order. I would have said, "I am sorry. I love you." I don't know if my father would want to add thank you, but I would add thank you. Over the years, the gifts of my father's consciousness have become clearer to me, and the ego upsets that I experienced, or even those that I witnessed, have become less significant. the reason for the shift in importances, the spilled milk, the hurt feelings were so important at one point, but now have diminished. And the reason for that is because my self-centeredness has decreased a little bit. There are more people in the world with needs than just me. And as loud as my ego anxiety can be, I can more often hear other people's needs now. My father was a seeker, and I would suggest that you try to identify for yourself the nature of your own father. My father read and he studied lots of things. He tried to understand what made him tick and not tick. He was a lawyer. He could butcher meat. His father had a meat shop. He liked to tinker with his car engines, so he had mechanical interests and capabilities. He cut hair of the children. There were seven of us, so it made sense that he would have that skill for economic reasons, but he was excellent at it as well. He could do woodworking. He had a shop in our basement, in our cellar, so he could do all kinds of stuff with a whole bunch of tools and also do metalwork, probably developed when he was a foreman in an aircraft factory on Long Island during World War II. And most of all, my father was a superb teacher. That's really what he wanted to be. He wanted to be a college professor. He wanted to teach. And his father insisted that he begin practicing law. If I were to talk to my father, I would thank him for giving me the gift of his consciousness, and maybe my father would say, "You are welcome, Tom." Because my father is not in physical body any longer, I don't know if there are limitations to what he could say to me. I don't know if he can affect things on a physical plane, but I believe he can. Early in 1971, I was leaving New York to drive to Charleston, South Carolina. From there, my car would be shipped to the Canal Zone in Panama, and I would fly from Charleston to Panama. So before my drive, I decided to see how long I could drive without sleeping, kind of a personal endurance test. It was while I was driving about 60 miles an hour in a tunnel in the Delaware, Maryland area that I fell asleep at the wheel. But before I crashed into the wall, I felt a hard slap across the back side of my head. I was instantly awake. I took control of the car again, straightened it out, and was scared stiff at what just happened, or also what almost happened. And as soon as I got out of the tunnel and I was able, I pulled off the highway into a strip mall and went to sleep. I considered at the time that that slap had come from a spirit guide, because I was familiar with them. I had just done and learned automatic writing from my mother, my older sister Mary, and my younger sister Anne. But when I think back, I remembered the only other time my father got mad at me in a car. I was 12 years old, and he was going to teach me how to drive. There I was, 12 years old, wearing sunglasses behind the wheel of a Volkswagen Bug with a stick shift. I put the car in reverse, trying to see through the rearview mirror, and I backed up crookedly and ran sideways into the side of our house. My father slapped the glasses right off my face. He hit the glasses, he didn't hit me. He got out of the car, and with his foot he pushed down the fuel oil pipe on the side of the house, where fuel oil was put into the tank that was in the basement. And the car was fetched up. It was stuck on that. Now, looking back, I think it was my father who may have saved me from injury or death and from injuring or killing other motorists in that tunnel in 1971. My father had been non-physical since November 1964. What would my father have said to me then? Probably something about using common sense and about protecting other people. If I had thought about protecting other people, I would have thought of my pregnant wife and our two young children. I would have thought of all the other drivers on the highway, and certainly in the tunnel, and the families of those drivers. I didn't. I thought only of my little endurance test to see how long I could go without falling asleep, and I never considered any possible consequences to that behavior. I like the idea of cause and effect, the law of cause and effect. We reap what we sow. I like the fact that it is considered to be inseparable and unchangeable. It is consistent. I like it because it adds predictability to life, and frankly, it makes it a lot more understandable, and it seems divinely fair. Being fair is an important value to me. I like that thought that God is fair, not prejudiced, not preferential, and not punitive. Fair in the distribution of love at all times to all its creations. I like that. I think there's relief and release in understanding and accepting the law of cause and effect. I once went to a psychic astrologer in New York City when I lived there. Her name was Phyllis Woodbury. She was about 80 years old or so, maybe even slightly older than that. A few minutes after she was looking over my astrology chart, she said, Well, that explains your difficult relationship with your mother. So, what do you mean? You were not nice to her in a previous life. Not nice at all. And if she has been not nice to you in this life, that is why. I laughed, and I immediately felt a sense of relief and release. I was totally accepting of the effects I might have caused to my mother previously. I considered then, soon as I heard that from Phyllis, that we were even, we were balanced, the debt was paid, and we were now playing on a level playing field, where we could make choices about how we were going to relate to one another. I don't have any knowledge of past lives with my father. Except for his struggles with alcohol and its influences on his behavior, he was a good father. I know quite a bit about my father's childhood and his parents. His parents died long before I was born. I know of them, but I don't know them. I already know how the home environment can shape a person's consciousness, so I doubt if my father, if he could talk to me, would tell me about his early life as a way of excusing his behavior. I doubt that that would happen. He loved to teach, so if he wanted to talk to me, I expect that he would be in the teaching mode. He was a lawyer, so I suppose presenting a case with mitigating circumstances, that's possible. But I don't see that teaching having value. But perhaps if it increased my compassion, that would be valuable. Increased compassion would be a good thing, and any lesson leading to that is a valuable lesson. Seeing the questions of life as being black and white may make decisions appear to be easier for us, but life doesn't seem to be black and white. There are lots of gray areas, lots of colors, lots of shading, and insisting that life situations conform to a rigid, binary, yes-no, black-white, good-bad model was going to lead to great unhappiness and frustration. My father would probably tell me that again. I guess if our fathers wanted to talk to us, what they say would be context-related. If we were stranded up to our eyeballs in a snowbank, our fathers probably would not talk about their advice in remodeling our kitchens. If we were in danger, they would try to impel us to safety. If we were afraid, they might tell us we are safe and protected, and all we had to do was to believe that. If we were anxious, they might say, it is going to be okay. And if we were angry, they might say, step back and widen your viewpoints before you take any action. And if we continued to be controlling, they might say, you are not going to get it all done. Let go. Allow. Get into the streams of divine benevolence. You will be happily carried along. Learn to trust. And there is plenty of time to do that. And there is plenty of information that will support you in that, including our conversations. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.